This is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. The circuit court in Adams County, Illinois, has gotten national attention this month. It came after Judge Robert Adrian overturned a conviction in a sexual assault case. Drew Clinton had been convicted of assaulting a 16-year-old girl at a party. In reversing the conviction, the judge made comments that, to many ears, are a textbook example of putting the burden of preventing sexual assault on the person who is attacked. After the episode, Judge Adrian was reassigned from criminal court. Instead, he'll be handling civil cases. Meanwhile, the Adams County State's Attorney's Office has said it will try to reinstate the original guilty verdict against the defendant. Today, we'll talk about the details of the case, what happened the night of the incident, the trial, the reversal, and the outrage that followed. And we'll also talk about the broader issues this case helped illuminate. Joining us now to discuss his reporting on the story is Matt Hupp, executive editor at the Herald Whig newspaper in Quincy and the Hannibal Courier Post. Matt, welcome to The 21st.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Megan Dusterhaus, executive director of the Quincy Area Network Against Domestic Abuse, known by the acronym QUINATA. Megan, welcome to The 21st to you as well.
Hi, glad to be here.
And finally, we're joined by Dan McConkey, associate professor of law at Northern Illinois University. I should say, if his name sounds familiar, that could be because it sounds similar to the name of the Republican leader in the Illinois Senate, though it is spelled differently. Professor Dan McConkey, welcome to The 21st to you.
Thank you. Glad to be here this morning.
And listeners, we do want to warn you that for the rest of the show, we're going to be discussing sensitive topics, including sexual assault. It may not be appropriate for some ears. You can join our conversation at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Or you can tweet us at 21st Show, at 21st Show. And I should mention, we did reach out to Judge Adrian with the 8th Circuit Court in Illinois, left a message with his office yesterday requesting an interview or statement, and have not heard back. So, Matt, I'm going to begin with you. You've been covering this story for the Herald Whig. Can you just set up from the beginning, starting with what happened at that graduation party and eventually the trial and its outcome?
Yes. So the police reports basically say that this girl, she was 16. She had attended a graduation party where she had got drunk and basically went to the pool, went swimming at some point. And she told police that she eventually passed out. And she said when she woke up, she had a pillow being pushed on her face and that she was being assaulted by Clinton, who is from Michigan, but he used to attend schools in Quincy. So she told police that she told him to stop, but he didn't stop until she told him a second time and pushed him off. And they were at another house after the party, where I believe they were going to be crashing that night. And she went into another room and told her friend, and they got a ride back to her home, where they slept in her parents' camper before her parents woke up the next day and she told her father, who called police. The case went to a bench trial last October.
Bench trials before a judge, not a jury, right?
Correct. And that's usually a decision made by the defendant in cases. They choose the bench trial. And the judge, Judge Robert Adrian, found him guilty on one count of sexual assault.
And I understand there were two other counts that were, he was found not guilty. I don't know if you can briefly just talk about that.
Yeah, he was charged with three counts of criminal sexual assault, and the judge only found him guilty on one of those counts, and he found him not guilty of the other two.
So, Dan, I want to ask you, what is the state's attorney has said it's going to, or I don't know, maybe we should, let me continue with that story. So Matt, let me go back to you. What happens next? At what point does the judge say, you know what, change my mind on this?
So on January 3rd, Mr. Clinton was brought into court for his sentencing hearing, and his attorney, a local attorney, Drew Schnack, filed a couple motions, one to basically find that mandatory minimums were unconstitutional, and another basically a standard motion to, overturn the conviction, motion to reconsider the conviction. And under his motion on the to overturn was that he argued the state did not meet its burden of proof for the conviction. And during the course of the case, the judge, basically, instead of moving to sentencing, he changed his decision and said that he found that the prosecution failed to prove their case and changed the verdict to not guilty. And in doing so, he said that he had believed that Clinton had served 148 days in the Adams County Jail, and that was enough for this type of case. So basically, in the eyes of many, is that he overturned it based on just that he believed Mr. Clinton served enough time in jail already, because he faced a minimum of 4 years in prison.
Megan Dusterhouse, can I ask you what the judge said that was, quote, plenty of punishment, I think was his quote. And he, he made note that Clinton had just turned 18 with no prior criminal record. What was your reaction to those comments and the judge's decision to overturn the case, setting aside the question of the pool party, which I want to come back to a little later?
Sure. Well, I mean, I think from an advocate standpoint, like, we look to the legislature to write the sexual assault statutes in the state of Illinois. And although we're not in charge of writing those statutes ourselves as advocates, we do believe that that is the legislature's under their authority. And that if someone does not agree with those statutes, that the correct thing to do would be to engage the legislature to adjust the minimum sentence. There's minimum sentences in place for a reason. And we don't think that an individual judge should have the authority to just decide that they can be ignored.
And in this case, it's not just that, you know, the sentence is effectively reduced, but then there's, I imagine, also registration that would have had to happen otherwise, probably.
Right. So since the conviction was overturned, like, at this point, he would not have to register because he hasn't been convicted of anything.
Okay. Well, we need to take a break here on the program. When we come back, I want to ask Professor Dan McConkie about the idea that the state's attorney's office is going to be moving to try and reinstate the verdict and what the steps are there. If you want to join our conversation, if you have a comment or a question about this case, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Or you can tweet us at 21st Show, at 21ST Show. And when we come back, we'll be talking not only about continuing, what the ongoing issues are in the sort of the legal side of this case, but also some of the comments the judge made about the people who, quote, didn't exercise their parental responsibilities at this pool party with alcohol and high school students. And, you know, the idea that they, quote, allowed co-eds and female people to swim in their underwear in the swimming pool, close quote, which a lot of people have said sounds an awful lot like victim blaming, putting the responsibility on the victim for preventing assaults like the one that was in this case. We will continue after a short break. This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking today for the rest of the program about a case out of Adams County, Illinois, where Quincy is the big city, about a case involving what had been a conviction for sexual assault of a 16-year-old girl at a party that the judge later overturned. And the state's attorney is trying to get it reinstated. The judge made some comments that a lot of people have thought sound like victim blaming. We're going to talk more about that a little later in the conversation. We're speaking with Matt Hopp, executive editor at the Herald Whig newspaper in Quincy, also the Hannibal Courier Post. Megan Dusterhouse, who's executive director of the Quincy Area Network Against Domestic Abuse, and associate professor Dan McConkie of the law school at Northern Illinois University. And Dan, I want to ask you, the state's attorney's office has said they are going to try and reinstate the verdict. That's something that I think is you don't hear about that quite a lot. Can you talk about that process? What is the process like? How likely is it to prevail?
I wish I could tell you more about that process. I've never seen something like this happen before.
Wow. So okay, that validates my own observation, at least, I guess.
You know, I've been studying criminal justice for about 2 decades, and I just haven't seen one quite like this. So I don't know the exact vehicle. It makes sense to me that they can file some sort of motion, and that probably a different judge will hear that motion. I think, you know, because it wasn't a jury trial, I think, you know, it doesn't necessarily violate the defendant's double jeopardy rights to have a conviction, you know, vacated and then reinstated. So I think it can be done. And I think there's probably a procedural way to accomplish it. And I think that one possible ground would be that the judge found the defendant guilty and then said, essentially, and this is from my reading of the transcript, I disagree with the sentence that he would get, therefore I am now going to find him not guilty. That doesn't sound like a very good reason to you know, to take away the guilty verdict. So I think they probably have strong grounds to win whatever motion they file.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And, you know, for what it's worth, I'm not a law professor, but I did start my career covering the Illinois Supreme Court for 3 years for the Chicago Daily Law Bulletin. I've never seen anything like this either. Yeah. Megan, let me ask you about some of the judge's comments then that he made. And again, I'll mention we did reach out to the judge's office to invite him to either request an interview or a statement. We did not hear back. But in his comments where he vacated the conviction, he criticized the parents who allowed the graduation party, saying they, quote, didn't exercise their parental responsibilities, close quote. And, quote, they allow co-eds and female people to swim in their underwear in the swimming pool, end quote. Can you respond to that?
Absolutely. I think that it's pretty clear right now that this is victim blaming, and our community widely recognizes that it's victim blaming and that it's focusing on the victim's behavior and saying that somehow her actions led her to be assaulted. We know that the penalty for underage drinking or for swimming in a pool with your friends is absolutely not sexual assault. That is not how our criminal justice system works. But I also really want to mention that what we're looking at here when we do this, when we victim blame, is we're focusing on individual actions by a specific person. Focusing on individual behavior is not going to prevent sexual assault. What it's going to do is, like, maybe possibly if it's effective, make one person safe, but then the perpetrator is just going to move on to, like, someone else who may be more vulnerable that they can more effectively target. So we're not actually doing anything to prevent sexual assault as a whole. We're really just, like, trying to look at it on an individual basis and say, if only this person didn't do this, they wouldn't have ended up being sexually assaulted. The other side of that too is that we know that all these steps that, like, mainly young women will take to keep themselves safe from sexual assault, use the buddy system, don't drink alcohol, don't leave a drink unattended, largely those things are ineffective. And you can sort of see that in this case with, no matter what had happened prior to the assault, this happened at a location separate from the party. And in fact, the victim was asleep. So, like, by human nature, when you're sleeping, your brain is off guard, you're not attending to, like, you know, immediate safety needs and thinking that someone's gonna, you know, leap out of the forest and attack you.
Yeah, and I guess it goes to this, you know, as you said, this culture of trying to blame the victim. Do you sense, is there in our culture a sort of misplaced sympathy with, you know, you sometimes hear it's young men who are going to have their lives ruined, that sort of obviously overlooks the victim.
I think so. But I think also what you see happening, and this is really like a really great localized example of, like, where the rape crisis movement is at post Me Too era. So I usually, in cases like this, and I've been in this field for 12 years, I expect to have to come out and explain to people what victim blaming is and give them examples. And in this case, I was prepared to do that. But what I heard immediately from the community was, they don't need that to be explained to them. They understand what victim blaming is. And I have also had just people disclosing, coming out everywhere to tell me, hey, something like this happened to me when I was young and I wasn't able to report it. And now it's, like, still happening, and our criminal justice system is allowing it to keep happening. And the community is absolutely not okay with that. which is, you know, somewhat surprising having been in this work for a long time and feeling like screaming into the void all the time that no one was listening to what we were saying. Come to find out, post Me Too, our community has clearly gotten those messages that victim blaming is not okay and that no one deserves to be sexually assaulted.
Adams County Assistant State's Attorney Anita Rodriguez said her, quote, heart is bleeding for the victim. She said she never had a verdict reversed like this in her 40-year career and has no way to explain what happened. I should mention we contacted the state's attorney's office and invited Ms. Rodriguez to join our conversation. A representative from the office declined and said that was the only statement the office would be making for now. Matt Hopp, what has the response been like from local public officials from the powers that be?
Well, I mean, there's been a lot of, just overall backlash on his Judge Adrian's comments, as well as the overturning of the verdict. But one of the things that happened about a week after the sentencing was in his courtroom, he actually kicked out a prosecutor who had liked the statement from Quinata actually on their Facebook page. And he basically said, I can't be fair with you, get out. And the following day, basically an order was put in that reassigned him to civil cases and took the criminal case docket that he typically had away from him.
Dan, I want to ask you this. The attorney for Mr. Clinton, Drew Schnack, told the Herald Whig that he believed Adrian should have found his client not guilty because the prosecution did not meet the burden of proof beyond a reasonable doubt. Can you explain that and what happened there?
Yes. Before someone can be convicted of a crime, the jury or judge over the trial has got to find them guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. That's a very high standard of proof. It means essentially not just that the judge thinks it's likely that they committed it, but that there's no real doubt about who did it. Not a reasonable doubt at all. It's a very high standard to meet, and we do that to protect criminal defendants. So in this case, the judge, that's what makes this striking, is that the judge had found that he was fully convinced and even seemed to be speaking that way in the sentencing hearing about what had happened, that the defendant had in fact raped the victim. But then he just says, I'm going to find that the state failed to meet the burden of proof. And like I said before, that's just to avoid imposing a sentence that the judge thought was too high.
Yeah, that same attorney said the only evidence of what went on in that room was the girl saying she couldn't remember or didn't know. Do situations like that complicate sexual assault cases from a legal standpoint?
They do, because if a jury sees the case as simply he said, she said, they might decide, how am I going to know what really happened? Therefore, it's not proven beyond a reasonable doubt. I think, at least after the Me Too movement, I think a lot more people are willing to recognize that the persuasive testimony of a victim and the consideration of the surrounding circumstances is plenty of evidence to show something happened beyond reasonable doubt. And it was convincing to the judge in this case as of October. He just changed his mind all of a sudden.
Megan, can you talk about how that sort of issue affects a victim's ability to come forward and to cope with what happened to them?
Sure. I mean, in this case, so what happened in that sentencing was the victim and her family were in court that day to present victim impact statements, which is the opportunity for the victim to say, here's the way that this person's crime against me has affected my life in like largely a very negative way. And it was my understanding she had prepared and worked on that statement. And then instead of really being able to give that statement to the court prior to sentencing, she was instead chastised and present in court while the judge chastised her family, her parents. And that has the ultimate effect of just re-traumatizing the victim, also re-traumatizing the family. And I think that in this case, the victim has actually come forward and said, what Drew did to me, the perpetrator, what he did to me was bad, but what Judge Adrian did was actually so much worse. So now you have someone dealing with like a complex trauma. And she has also been very forthcoming that there was a suicide attempt after the assault. So we have a young woman who has been like very open about the way she has struggled at post-assault. And then the way that has like this overturning of the conviction has really affected her. And not just overturning the conviction, but the way that Judge Adrian sort of went on like an extensive lecture in the courtroom, which is sort of like in addition to the reprehensible decision to overturn the conviction based on the minimum sentence.
You work with a lot of women who have experienced abuse and sexual violence. Is there a reluctance to pursue legal action against their perpetrators and you know, because of their perception?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, people are generally like pretty intelligent in realizing that if they experience a sexual assault, that there may be factors of that assault that make it less likely that they could successfully, you know, file charges and have that be a successful prosecution. Sometimes you have like delayed reports where people just like, because they're traumatized, delay like going to the emergency room for like a medical forensic exam, which means that by the time they might, you know, work up the courage or get in the right headspace to go, a lot of the evidence, physical evidence, is largely gone. And I think you can even see from like, if you look at the number of arrests and prosecutions in Adams County and compare them to our own internal statistics of clients that we've served, it is clear that not every victim, or not even the majority of victims, are, you know, reporting to police and or continuing to participate in any sort of prosecution. And, you know, our stance is that we're not going to tell victims that they should or should not report to police or cooperate with prosecution. We're going to lay out for them like all the possible outcomes that we can see for either decision and make sure that they're making an informed choice.
Matt, we're coming to the end of our time on the program today. My mind immediately wondered whether, and I think this is a closed process, so we may not know, there would be a judicial inquiry board complaint against Judge Adrian. But Matt, what are you going to be watching for next in this case?
I think we're be watching for whatever the procedure that the Adams County State's Attorney says they're going to be doing next. And obviously looking in the next few months, whether Judge Adrian decides if he's going to seek retention or not as well.
Good point. When do you know when he would be up next?
He would be up in November of this year.
Oh, this year. Okay. Interesting. All right. Well, that is all the time we have for this conversation. I want to thank Matt Hopp, executive editor of the Herald Whig newspaper in Quincy. Megan Dusterhaus is the executive director of the Quincy Area Network Against Domestic Abuse, and associate professor of law Dan McConkie from Northern Illinois University. Matt, Megan, Dan, thank you so much for being with us to talk about this today on the 21st.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that is all the time we have for our show today. Coming up tomorrow, Illinois' Little Calumet River recently made the New York Times global list of 52 places for a changed world, highlighting travel destinations with a social conscience. They were drawn in part by a 7-mile African-American heritage water trail. The Little Calumet, we'll talk about it tomorrow on the 21st. Take a moment, please, to go to our website, 21stshow.org. There you can find all of our past conversations. You can share them with a friend. If you found something interesting on the program you want to share, please don't hesitate to do so. While you're there, you can also subscribe to our podcast, or you can just find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, NPR One. Just search for The 21st, The21ST. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.